Good evening. Trump declares a state of emergency. Stocks surge. Pressure mounts to close New York City schools and Julian Assange and Chelsea Manning. What's the connection? With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the news for Friday, March 13th, 2020. And a federal judge on Thursday ordered the release of Chelsea Manning, the former Army intelligence analyst who in 2010 leaked archives of military and diplomatic documents to WikiLeaks and who was jailed last year for refusing to testify before a grand jury that is investigating the organization and its founder, Julian Assange. A lawyer for Julian Assange is Barry Pollack.
The judge indicated in his order releasing her that there was no need to continue to hold her in an effort to coerce her to testify because the grand jury had concluded its work and is being dismissed.
What was that grand jury looking into that relates to Julian Assange?
The grand jury was looking into WikiLeaks generally, not necessarily Julian Assange specifically. Assange has already been charged with 17 counts of violating the Espionage Act and one count of conspiring for non-authorized computer intrusion. The government is not allowed to use a grand jury to investigate existing charges. The only thing it can use a grand jury for is to investigate new charges. So it was either investigating the possibility of bringing additional charges against Mr. Assange, or it was investigating the possibility of bringing charges against people other than Mr. Assange.
The fact that they've wrapped up this inquiry doesn't necessarily mean it's over.
It doesn't necessarily mean that it is over. It is certainly not over for Mr. Assange. He remains charged with offenses that carry a maximum sentence of 175 years in prison. It doesn't affect the pending case against Mr. Assange. What it does do, hopefully, is indicate that they're not looking to pursue charges against other individuals.
Why was Chelsea Manning being held? Was she? Because there was a lot. We talked earlier, too. There was a lot of speculation that this had to do with her arrest for not participating with this grand jury had to do with the charges against Assange.
You're right. She refused to provide testimony to the grand jury. She said that everything that she had to say that was relevant to her interactions with WikiLeaks, she already testified to in her own court-martial, and she simply wasn't going to participate in the grand jury process. And so the court held her in contempt for her refusal to testify before the grand jury, ordering her incarcerated until she agreed to testify and also ordering that fines be imposed on her to escalate with each passing day. When the court yesterday vacated the order, the court ordered her release from prison, did not give her any relief from the fines. So she owes something like over $250,000 in fines. But it was all designed in an effort to coerce her into testifying. Now, she had said she was not going to testify no matter how long they held her, and her lawyers were trying to get her released on that basis. If holding her in jail wasn't going to work, it wasn't going to meet the objective of getting her to testify, she should have been released. The judge didn't even hear that argument because he said at this point it doesn't matter. The grand jury has ended its work, and so there's no need to continue to hold her.
They think they're going to go after the money? Do we know what's going to happen as far as the $250,000? I mean, she can never pay that back, I think.
I would assume that she does not have the resources to pay that, and so it will be like any other unsatisfied judgment. I suppose if she comes into money at some point from some source, they could try to go after it. Look, I think the whole episode is very unfortunate. I don't think they needed her testimony. She did say everything that she had to say about the matter in her court-martial. She said that she made her own decision to do what she did. She wasn't doing it because anybody asked her to or told her to. And so the government, I think, was trying to prove that somehow Assange convinced her to leak to him, but she's already said under oath that that was not the case.
How are things going with Julian Assange right now?
His condition is not great. That is certainly an understatement. The last week in February, they had a hearing in London that was the beginning of the extradition process. It was not the taking of any evidence. It was more like what we would consider pretrial arguments and opening statements. There's a three-week hearing scheduled to start May 18th where actual testimony will be taken to ultimately decide if the UK is going to grant the U.S. government's request to extradite him to face the charges here.
Why don't they just let him off on bail, I mean, you know, while awaiting trial?
I couldn't agree with that more, but that is not their view. They view him as a risk of flight, and so they are holding him pending the extradition proceedings. And the extradition proceedings with appeals could go on for a matter of years, and he is sitting in a high-security prison despite the fact he hasn't been convicted of any crime.
The treatment of both Assange and Manning seems to have a certain amount of, well, we might not get what we want, but we're going to, you know, get our pound of flesh.
Certainly, by charging Assange for publishing information that was truthful information that was in the public's interest to know, information that exposed that United States military had committed war crimes. By charging that under the Espionage Act, it sends a powerful message to journalists all over the world that if you publish something that embarrasses the United States government, you could be looking at similar treatment.
And Barry Pollack is a lawyer for Julian Assange. Under federal law, a witness can only be jailed for civil contempt if there is reasonable belief that incarceration will coerce the witness into testifying. If the jail time has no coercive effect and is purely punitive, the witness is supposed to be released. Manning has said she believes grand juries in general are an abuse of power and that she would rather starve to death than testify. Judge Trenga, in originally sending Manning to jail, said there was no dishonor in testifying to grand juries, which are referenced specifically in the U.S. Constitution, and that he hoped time in jail would allow Manning to reflect on that. Manning had previously spent 7 years in a military prison for delivering a trove of classified information to WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, who's under indictment at the same Alexandria courthouse. It's possible that prosecutors could convene another grand jury and again subpoena Manning, and she could again be jailed for refusing to testify, but there's no clear indication from prosecutors that they would do so. And President Donald Trump declared the coronavirus pandemic a national emergency today. His declaration came as the government struggles with relief and officials trace to slow the spread of the outbreak. He said it would free up as much as $50 billion for state and local governments to respond to the outbreak. Trump also waived interest on federally held student loans and moved to prop up energy markets by directing the Department of Energy to buy oil to fill the Strategic Petroleum Reserve.
World Health Organization confirmed today many of the things that what we said were 100% correct.
How long is this?
Including our designation before them of Europe. Like our earlier very aggressive actions with China, this measure will save countless lives. I appreciate a number of the folks behind me. A number of the people behind me said that that saved a lot of lives, that early designation. But it is only the beginning of what we're really doing, and now we're in a different phase. We had some very old and obsolete rules that we had to live with. It worked under certain circumstances, but not under mass circumstances. They were there for a long time. They were in place for a long time, and we're breaking them down now. And they're very usable for certain instances, but not for this. To unleash the full power of the federal government in this effort today, I am officially declaring a national emergency. Two very big words. The action I am taking will open up access to up to $50 billion of very important and a large amount of money for states and territories and localities in our shared fight against this disease. In furtherance of the order, I'm urging every state to set up emergency operation centers effective immediately. You're going to be hearing from some of the largest companies and greatest retailers and medical companies in the world. They're standing right behind me and inside of me. I'm also asking every hospital in this country to activate its emergency preparedness plan so that they can meet the needs of Americans everywhere. The hospitals are very engaged. New York and various other places are also very engaged. I just spoke with Governor Cuomo. We had a very good conversation, and we're working very strongly with many states, including New York. The emergency orders I'm issuing today will also confer broad new authority to the Secretary of Health and Human Services. The Secretary of HHS will be able to immediately waive provisions of applicable laws and regulations to give doctors, all hospitals, and healthcare providers maximum flexibility to respond to the virus and care for patients. This includes the following critical authorities: the ability to waive laws to enable telehealth, a fairly new incredible thing that's happened in the not-so-distant past. I tell you, what they've done with telehealth is incredible. It gives remote doctors visits and hospital check-ins the power to waive certain federal license requirements so that doctors from other states can provide services in states with the greatest need. Number two, the ability to waive requirements that critical access hospitals limit the number of beds to 25 and the length of stay to 96 hours. The ability to waive the requirements of a 3-day hospital stay prior to admission to a nursing home, big thing. The authority to waive rules to hinder hospitals' ability to bring additional physicians on board or obtain needed office space. They can do as they want. They can do what they have to do. They know what they have to do. Now they don't have any problem getting it done. The authority to waive rules that severely restrict where hospitals can care for patients within the hospital itself, ensuring that the emergency capacity can be quickly established. We'll remove or eliminate every obstacle necessary to deliver our people the care that they need and that they're entitled to. No resource will be spared, nothing whatsoever. 10 days ago, I brought together the CEOs of commercial labs at the White House and directed them to immediately begin working on a solution to dramatically increase the availability of tests. Other countries have called us and worked with us, and they're doing similar things or will be doing similar things. As a result of that action, today we're announcing a new partnership with private sector to vastly increase and accelerate our capacity to test for the coronavirus. We want to make sure that those who need a test can get a test very safely, quickly, and conveniently. But we don't want people to take a test if we feel that they shouldn't be doing it. And we don't want everyone running out and taking only if you have certain symptoms. Using federal emergency authorities, the FDA approved a new test for the virus. We did this within hours after receiving the application from Roche, a process that would normally take weeks. We therefore expect up to 500,000 additional tests will be available early next week. We'll be announcing locations probably on Sunday night.
And President Trump giving a state of the starting a state of emergency for the United States, or demanding that one, or not sure how you call it. Let's see. We'll look back here and find out what I called it earlier. Declaring a national emergency. Trump says he will likely get tested after being near someone with COVID-19, which is the other word for the coronavirus. He said he had denied that he wanted to be tested in the last few days. He had been asked that question over and over again, said he didn't think he needed to, but he seems to have broken down on that and has given in to some interest into whether or not he will test positive after coming into contact with several other top leaders who were positive. As Trump spoke, the stock market jumped, regaining most of what was lost yesterday. But Trump's own coronavirus advisors, such as Dr. Anthony Fauci and Vice President Pence, have criticized the president and the country, not just the president, but the country, for its lack of readiness at the basic level, because the testing was not available, it was very much allowed to get out of control. Basically, the epidemic, the pandemic, as it's called, was allowed to get out of control. And Jim Kahn, a professor emeritus of health policy studies at the University of California, says Trump's actions, while welcome, are just too late to save many.
Good that finally he's issuing this emergency declaration, which is what should have happened much sooner. And also what should have happened much sooner is that he should have listened to his experts, who told him that this is a crisis, and that there needs to be a concerted action to test widely in order to understand the scope of the crisis and to guide public health resources. Postponing the declaration of emergency to free up federal resources and state resources was a real disaster. I'm glad he finally did the right thing under incredible pressure from all sides, but it took way too long.
Why do you think he took so long to recognize this as a problem it is? I mean, New York Times said today by July, if they don't do anything, it'd be a million people dead, 100 million people infected.
He has treated this as a political problem in his usual fashion. He attempted to spin the severity of a problem as very minimal, and that he's done a great job and that his administration has done a great job, ignoring all the facts. And in the case of a pandemic like this, ignoring the facts, that is putting your head in the sand, not only doesn't resolve the problem, it makes it worse, because failing to respond early and effectively exacerbates the severity of the problem. If you compare what we did to what Taiwan did, using very concerted and thoughtful efforts, including use of very good clinical data from their single-payer healthcare system, they were able to keep the epidemic to a real minimum.
Is that the problem here, that without a single-payer system, earlier there's confusion on who's going to pay for the tests, who's going to pay for the treatment? They said yesterday they didn't want to pay for the treatment.
Exactly. I think what you want is a situation where people know that they face no financial barriers to get checked out by a doctor, to get tested, and to get treated. You also want them to know that they won't lose money at work. That's not a medical issue, but that's also an important consideration, is to have adequate protection for payment for sick days. And with Medicare for All, you would have that kind of financial protection. In addition, because you have a single billing system with a single data system, think of it as big data applied to pandemic control, you'd be able to use those data to help stop the epidemic early. And because we have so many different insurance companies, and each one has a different set of rules, and each provider uses a different electronic health record, you basically have no ability to tap into those data. So you have no big data.
Mm-hmm. What about his ban of travel from Europe and Asia? He's been blaming other nations, personifying the virus, basically.
I think, again, it's part of the political calculus to try to make it seem like it's a foreign problem that's been imposed on us. Well, of course, it's an international problem. But if we did the right thing up front, we could have prevented the rapid spread that we're now beginning to see. I think a ban on foreign travel will accomplish almost nothing. The virus is now certainly here, and we should be focusing on control efforts within our own country.
Do you think this will have an effect on his reelection prospects?
The guy's Teflon, made of Teflon, so everything bounces off. But I was intrigued by the cover of the new issue of the New Yorker magazine, which is a wonderful painting of Trump wearing a face mask, except instead of wearing it over his mouth, he's wearing it over his eyes. And I think at least some people will realize that his approach to denying the existence of this problem was ridiculous and harmful, and hopefully that'll swing a few percent of the vote against him, and it'll be easier to vote him out of office.
Jim Kahn is a professor emeritus of health policy studies at the University of California, San Francisco. Calls to close New York City schools grew Friday. The coronavirus has already darkened Broadway, shuttered museums, and closed libraries. As communities close schools across the nation, the New York City Teachers Union and a growing list of politicians say it's time for New York to do the same. City Council Speaker Corey Johnson said earlier today schools should be closed for the safety and well-being of teachers and students. Johnson continues, the city must immediately come up with a plan that includes child care relief for families who need it so that our essential workers, especially healthcare workers, can continue with their duties. He added, we must also ensure meals and medical care are provided for students who rely on schools for these crucial services.
Mayor Bill de Blasio has worried that closing public schools that educate over 1.1 million students could force healthcare workers, first responders, and other needed employees to stay home to care for their children. De Blasio says he is also concerned that hundreds of thousands of poor students could go hungry without their free or reduced-price school meals. As officials deliberated, restaurants, subway cars, and sidewalks were noticeably emptier in New York City as people telecommuted to work and avoided public places. Some store shelves were wiped clean of basic necessities such as toilet paper and tissues, and products like hand sanitizers and wipes. The virus, as of Friday afternoon, had been confirmed in more than 420 people in New York State, including over 150 in the city, and it caused one death in the metropolitan area. In nearby New Jersey, about 50 New York patients are hospitalized. The number of illnesses may be higher because of a shortage of test kits. The state on Friday opened a drive-through testing center in New Rochelle, and Governor Andrew Cuomo said New York had gotten federal permission to work with 28 laboratories to amp up testing. He said he had hoped the statewide capacity could hit 6,000 tests a day next week, compared to about 3,200 tests done in total to date. The governor spoke earlier today.
I was in New Rochelle this morning where we opened our drive-through testing facility, which is a great piece of work, and it's smart and it's innovative. And I want to thank all the people who made it happen very quickly. I especially want to thank the healthcare workers who were there. These healthcare workers, the nurses, the doctors, they are really just remarkable people. You know, just think about it. They're anxious and they put themselves in that situation because they're there to help other people. So God bless them. The focus for New York and every state in this country is about reducing the spread of the virus. We've said the way to reduce the spread, the rate of the spread, two-prong approach, reduce the density. Yesterday we announced measures to reduce the density, gatherings of 500 and over, et cetera. And the second way is to increase the testing capacity. The more you test, the more positives you find, the more you can isolate, the more you reduce the spread. You see, you learn from the countries that have come before, China, South Korea, Italy. The better you are at testing, the more you test, the more you can reduce the spread. I've told you that we've been talking to the federal government about the federal government authorizing states to do testing. States, state health departments regulate labs in their states. If you go for a test now at a lab that is regulated by the state, we need obviously more testing capacity and we need it quickly. So I said I spoke to the vice president about this. Vice President Mike Pence is a former governor, so he understood the state's roles, Department of Health and regulating laboratories. He said he would look at it. I said I thought it could make a tremendous difference. I spoke with the vice president today, and I spoke with the president, and they are authorizing New York State to do the testing and allowing our labs to do the test and allowing the state health department to set up the protocol. That will increase dramatically our testing capacity. I want to thank the president and the vice president for their receptivity to the idea. And I want to thank them for their quick turnaround. We have the authorization as of today. So today, the state health department will be going out to the 28 laboratories that the Department of Health works with on complex testing matters, and those 28 labs will be authorized to do testing. So we're down in the boiler room now, turning all the valves. The labs will be coming on. We think next week we'll go up to a capacity of about 6,000 tests per day, which would be a dramatic increase for us. To date, we've done about 3,000 tests, so that is a very, very big difference. And testing is probably the single most important thing that we can be doing now. As I said, it will double we'll be able to do about, in one day, all the tests that we have done to date, believe it or not. So, again, I want to thank the Vice President and especially the President who facilitated this and moved quickly. A couple of quick items on the executive order. I'm going to do another executive order. There are issues that come up that need to be addressed. Unemployment insurance, we're going to waive the seven-day waiting period for anyone who was unemployed as a result of quarantine or laid off because of the virus. Local schools are making a decision whether to stay open or closed. That's a local decision. The state rule is if a child in that school tests positive, the school must close for 24 hours. So we clean the school, assess the situation, and then make a decision. Some of the schools want to know if they close, do they get penalized by the state for not following the 180-day rule, which is 180 days of class to qualify for state funding. We're going to waive the 180-day requirement.
And that's Governor Cuomo. Restaurants and night spots are reporting drop-offs of 20 to 80% over the past week, particularly around Times Square. And that's some of the news for Friday, March 13th, 2020. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Richie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.